A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're going to spend the next 30 minutes talking about Utah's what I call soft on crime approach. Because we got our hands, Dave, on a parole report that I think is a roadmap to why that wanted fugitive who shot two deputy sheriffs in the face on Saturday, right in front of the sheriff's office building in the jail there on 3400, 3300 South in South Salt Lake, I think it spells out why he did it. I think this report reveals a motive, and I think you'll also be questioning, as I did when I read through it, why in the world is Utah's criminal justice system giving somebody like him five second chances?
Remember, we learned yesterday on the show that Joshua Michael Johnson had a long trail of car break-ins, theft, drugs, including dealing cocaine to an undercover cop. He was a man who lived his life committing crime and catching breaks, quite honestly. But until we got this report, we could only really speculate about the motive for trying to kill two cops.
And this conversation that you and I are going to have, Dave, is going to build to another conversation we're going to have in 10 minutes with defense attorney, former prosecutor Greg Skordas, about Utah lawmakers and their push to soften drug crimes. We're going to have that conversation in depth in 10 minutes. But for right now, I want to focus this conversation on the drug charges from 2018 that Joshua Michael Johnson was hauled into court for. Okay, so 3 years ago, this case has dragged on for 3 years and eventually leads to the culmination and the gunfire we saw on Saturday. I think it's the driver that led up to what happened to those two deputy sheriffs. So chance number one, according to this parole report that came to us yesterday, thanks to our friends at KSL TV. Despite his criminal history, long criminal history, as you referenced, Dave, involving drugs, in this case in 2018, he's sentenced to 3 years probation. So he gets to serve his time out here with the rest of society. Not jail, not prison. Right away, he doesn't follow the rules. And he commits another crime. And he gets a second chance. Chance number two. After he's caught, judge sends him to jail for 6 months. Okay, so now he's locked up. But after 6 months, he's released. He fails probation requirements again. Then he gets a third chance. This time, apparently 6 months in jail is too long. He's given 60 days in jail. He doesn't even serve 60 days. He serves 47 days. And he gets out, but isn't sent at that time to a drug treatment program.
Which just has me scratching my head. Like, how many chances do you get? Even if you give someone the first chance,
yeah.
You know, we'll give you a wide berth. We'll give you a lot of opportunities to say, you know what, maybe this was a one-time deal. But after the second violation and the third, and you're not even spending the full sentence in jail, I think how a lot of people are wondering, why do we even give people 60 days? Why do we even
why
give
bother
them
2 months?
6 months.
Why bother with a month in jail?
Yeah.
Why do any of that if they're just going to get out and reoffend? I think that's a great point, Dave.
And I think what we see, and this has been the case, you and I have been doing this for a long time, but whenever we see these tragic stories, there's always, always a ramp up. There's always a criminal history, and it starts small. And I think we need to have a really, really strong conversation and try to figure out at what point is it the tipping point?
Yeah. When is enough enough?
Yes. I don't have a great answer for that, but I think we need to look at it and say these habitual offenders, are going to go down a bad road.
And somebody's going to pay the price.
And it's going to get worse and worse.
And in one case, this deputy who was shot lost an eye. And as you said yesterday, we were fortunate that we weren't talking on the show yesterday about two dead law enforcement officers.
I can't believe I'm so happy about an officer losing an eye. I mean, the chances of being shot in the face and not dying, I was astounded. I was astounded that two officers, two deputies shot in the face, and neither one of them died. Completely miraculous.
And let's not forget, that's exactly what happened to my friend, Unified Police Officer Doug Barney, when he was gunned down in 2016 in Holiday, getting out to help an individual who'd been in a car accident. That person turns, fires a gun, one shot in the eye. One shot in the eye. Fourth chance for Joshua Michael Johnson. Dave, I'm not done yet. This is that parole report that we got our hands on. KSL Television passed it off to us, thankfully shared it with us. He gets arrested again. This time, Dave, he gets 70 days in jail. So what is that? 2 months and a week? And then he gets released to this Odyssey House Treatment Center, but he only lasts there 4 days. And we talked to them yesterday, Dave.
Yeah, we talked to Odyssey House, and we learned that there are no locks on the doors.
Yeah, right.
There's nothing physically preventing them from leaving.
The treatment, residential treatment level of care does not involve a locked door. So while the individual is able to physically leave the treatment space, there would be a reporting to adult probation and parole and other legal contacts.
Okay, so then he gets reported after he walks away after just a few days from that treatment facility. He's arrested again. This time he gets 32 days in jail.
This is chance number five for those of you counting.
And this leads to chance five. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. So in February of this year, okay, so we're talking, you know, the shooting happens on Saturday with these two deputy sheriffs in front of the sheriff's office building. In February, he's released again to Odyssey House for treatment. Well, Dave, he walks away. I think within 24 hours, he's gone again. And the final line of that report, and that's what I believe leads up to the motive for the shooting. And the final line of that report, it is recommended that if he's captured again, that he finally be sent to prison for those crimes that he was charged with 3 years ago.
And as we are learning more and more about this case, we know that at least one of the deputies got a shot off.
Right.
And this individual, this suspect, is dead.
Yeah.
We're not totally certain if that was the shot that killed him. We'll learn more, but we're lucky that that those officers are not dead.
And that's just one drug case. One drug case. 3 years. Five chances. Straight ahead, Dave, we got to delve deeper into Utah lawmakers' push 6 years ago to reduce criminal penalties for drug offenses. In fact, I've got the data to show this program that lawmakers put in place 6 years ago has actually made our streets a lot more dangerous.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
We just detailed the revolving door. The suspect in the shooting of two Salt Lake County sheriff's deputies. In jail, out of jail, 60 days in jail, 37 days in jail, released, goes fugitive again, captured, put back in jail. I think this is the perfect example, sadly, of why Utah's go softer on crime approach just is not protecting the public. It's obviously not protecting police or the criminals. Remember, in this case, the man, the suspect, is dead. So you got two cops shot in the face. One lost his eye on Saturday. The suspect's deceased. Dave, I want to dive into the softer on crime approach that lawmakers launched 6 years ago, and also a state audit, a legislative audit that says this isn't just not working.
Well, I saw that, first of all, both these deputies have now been released from the hospital. One lost that eye. The suspect is dead. The other deputy was shot in the cheek. And the question was raised yesterday by the Fraternal Order of Police, how many other criminals on our streets have been given these bottomless second chances?
I think what a lot of people don't realize, Dave, is what happened 6 years ago on Capitol Hill. And what I called at the time, it felt like a soft on crime approach, especially with drug offenses. It's called JRI. We've referenced it here on the show. We've talked about it here on the show. We're going to dive deep into it. We're also going to get Greg Skordas, the defense attorney, now once a prosecutor, on the line to get his take on if it's working. I don't think it is. Back in 2015, lawmakers reduced criminal penalties for drug crimes. So a felony would become a misdemeanor. Why? Why would they do that? Well, the objective essentially was to help reduce prison capacity. And that in turn saves the state money. You're not locking up drug offenders. And the promise was that instead of prison, we're going to get them treatment. I didn't like it from the beginning. And here's why. I'm into second chances. That's fine. I'm not into fifth and sixth chances. But second chances, yes. But I didn't like it from the beginning because I felt it was underfunded in other areas, like treatment programs. And guess what? That funding has not materialized to the level that we were told it would.
Well, and one of the most difficult parts about treatment is treatment can be very, very ineffective. Because, and I've done this for a long time, my dad worked in a treatment facility, I've got family, I've worked in a treatment facility. What's so incredibly difficult about treatment programs is you have to have buy-in from the individual.
Yeah.
They have to want to change. Because I can tell you, I can't tell you how many kids, because I worked primarily with teenagers, would work the program to get out. Not to get better, but to get out of the program. Because many of them were sent there by the courts instead of being sent to juvenile detention. So that is why the simple case or the simple argument of, well, let's just get them treatment. Well, treatment will never work until that person wants to change.
That's excellent perspective, Dave. And having worked, as you said, in this type of setting, you saw that over and over again.
Over and over.
Yeah. So there's a sweeping audit that came out. It's 182 pages. I have it pulled up on my computer. I read through most of it last night. I've read a lot of articles about it. It came out last fall. It was done by the legislative auditor about justice reinvestment. And it is just not working. It's not working. And the audit spells it out. Here's really all I needed to see in that audit, actually. It was on a graph. There are two graphs, this one in particular, to tell me JRI is failing. The number of chronic drug offenders in the courts since JRI took effect 6 years ago has increased almost 300%.
Wow.
Almost 300%. And then you talk about low-level drug offenses, recidivism, which was supposed to be tackled under JRI. It means somebody, you know, doesn't reoffend. Recidivism has gone up. It's gone up from 29% in 2013, which was before JRI, which still isn't great. I mean, it's 30%, but you're gonna have people reoffend. But it's jumped to 37%. Greg Skordas, you can't tell me JRI is working, can you? He hung up. Did Greg hang up on me? I know he didn't hang up.
I'm here.
So you cannot sit here and argue with me right now that JRI is working after I just said that the chronic drug offenders in the courts has increased almost 300% under JRI.
No, I can't. And I have to agree with what you and Dave have said today. But you have to go back 6 years, Debbie, and look at what was happening in our country, in our state. And the idea, the notion at the time that low-level drug offenders, that is just possessors of drugs, just people who have it on their person, should not always be treated as felons. And we looked at that. Dealers are still treated very harshly. Distributors are still dealt with very harshly. But the end user, we thought, and you're right, looking back now, some of that has not worked out very well. But we thought not decriminalizing drugs, but making them misdemeanors, would help those who have the problem and who need help and who perhaps could do better in treatment. And what we've done poorly, and Dave said this very well, is we didn't set up the treatment very well. We didn't fund the treatment end of that as well as we clearly, looking back, should have.
Were we also overly optimistic on how willing these drug users would be to receive treatment and to try to get clean?
Oh, absolutely. You know, 25 years ago, we started drug courts in Utah, which didn't decriminalize drugs either, but allowed drug offenders, if they completed a year of very intensive treatment, to have their cases reduced or sometimes dismissed. And we found that the recidivism rate with that population was extremely good. That was a great step, and I think that JRI was another step, hopefully, in that direction, and it didn't work out. And this case that happened near the jail with the two deputies was a horrible example of a failure in the system. But I still look back on what the legislature was thinking, what they were doing at the time, and a lot of us thought, and I'll blame myself as much as anyone, that was an initiative that had a lot of promise.
It had promise, but there were promises that were failed. I mean, in terms of what they were going to fund. In that report, that audit I was just talking about, Greg spells it out. I mean, there is a lack of funding for treatment programs. There's just, a lack of funding for supervision. You can say, okay, well, JRI was set to reduce the prison population. Well, they did a great job of that, because they didn't put as many people away in prison. But now we have a mess on the streets where people are impacted by this. And one of the statistics alone that I read in this report, Greg, is that there's some 21,000 drug-related crimes, chronic offenders, that 3,700 chronic offenders have committed 21,000 drug-related crimes in Utah since JRI. And how does that affect the people at home, the folks that are listening? Well, 800 crimes of those crimes are involving people. So those could be assaults. And then, 7,400 of those are property crimes. So people are, their garages are getting broken into and their cars are getting broken into. We got to fix this, Greg.
No question. And it's time to reset. It's time to go back, look at what we've done. It was an experiment. It was an idea. At the time, a lot of us were in favor of it. And let's try to treat the drug offender instead of punish the drug offender, because that was also a revolving door. And if you don't fund the treatment end of it, it's going to fail, and it has. So saving money on prison population and jail populations from the state was a great idea. But you have to refund that money. You have to re-resource it, I guess, toward treatment, because a lot of these people do want treatment. And Dave makes a good point, too, that a lot of people just want their case dropped, and they're willing to say or do whatever they can to get through the process, if you will, just to get their case behind them. But a lot of people really want the help with their drug abuse. Drug courts, like I say, have worked, and we just need to fund more ways to get treatment to these people.
Well, I hope that we can be adaptable, realize what works, what doesn't, and keep moving forward instead of just trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. Or vice versa.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.